Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Tuesday, June 6th. Matt Harmon here, continuing to come in your ears from the condo cast here in Virginia Beach, my mom's condo, this beautiful little bedroom I'm looking at here. What a sight, man. What a sight here for our summer series. We're continuing Flip the Script on the podcast. Joining me today to talk about who could be this year's Denver Broncos is none other than Yahoo royalty himself, Frank Schwab. Frank, what's going on, buddy?
I'm just impressed with those closet doors behind you, man. Those are clean. What a background we have for the podcast today.
I know.
I remember, by the way, very quickly doing a podcast. I think it must have been with Charles. Maybe it was with you. It might have been with you and Scott, actually, where I was in a Vegas hotel room. And the only way to really make it work with the lighting was stack up like six suitcases on top of each other, put my laptop. You know, it all looks professional right here, right? Mm-hmm. But behind the scenes, yeah, I'm wearing basketball shorts. I have my laptop on a beer cooler. You're still rocking the beer cooler.
You're still doing the beer cooler.
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't have it just works. It's a perfect height. Nobody sees it. Did you just see here from the shoulders up, man? So I got this. Yeah, it's actually a Broncos cylinder beer cooler right in front of me. It's great.
Oh wow, very very timely. Yeah, I've got the folding table and the folding chair here. Basically, yeah, looks like I'm at the church multi-purpose room for some sort of banquet,
play some
but really
bingo or something, man.
Yeah. Some sort of card game here. But Frank, we got serious business to get to on the podcast today. No really news of note, unless you can think of anything we need to hit on here in the NFL universe. But we've got a big time topic here today. We've been doing our summer series, Flip the Script, where we try to take the surprises of last year and sort of imagine who could be that team for this year. Frank, I know people have their feelings about this year's Broncos or this year's player, whatever, but it's a fun way to frame the analysis and it makes a lot of sense. So we're going to keep doing it here. And we want to talk about the Broncos on this one, and which is great timing, Frank, because you had a front row seat to that disaster of a Denver Broncos season last year.
I mean, I was thinking about this. I knew we were going to talk about this. And I want to ask you, could we see this coming? Because as I sat here last year about this time, I thought, you know, maybe the Broncos don't make the playoffs. Maybe, you know, it's a tough division. We thought maybe they go 9-8. They don't make the playoffs. If you would have told me this is how the Broncos season is going to play out, I would say, what are you talking about? There's no chance of that happening. Were there signs that we just didn't see that we should have seen coming with the Broncos that we could take lessons from?
I promise I'm not trying to pat myself on the back here, but I was one of the biggest Denver Broncos skeptics coming into the last season, mostly because I thought that offensive supporting cast around Russell Wilson was overrated. I thought these guys, Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy. Yeah. I really like Javonte Williams, even Tim Patrick. You know, Tim Patrick, I think, is one of these guys, Frank, where I call it like myth making or you're counting it twice, where he's a good player, you know, an undrafted guy who bounced around a little bit and then got a role with the Denver Broncos. And I think that like the fact that he came out of nowhere and became like a really nice, solid, I think like number three receiver. There's like local people in Denver that talk about him as if he's like this number one receiver or something like that. He's a good player, but like, let's kind of calm down a little bit. I also thought Cortland Sutton, like his reception perception from 2021 was kind of a disaster. Like he was a guy that after that ACL tear, I think has still just really struggled to recapture his old form. Jerry Jeudy, I talked about him with Dalton on the podcast last week, like, he's a guy who's a good player, but I think is sort of living off reputation as a route runner. Like I think he's shown flashes, but he's never really put it all together. So that was one of my biggest problems with Denver last year, that I think it was going so overstated that, you know, it was sort of like, well, what are DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett going to do without Russell Wilson? What's like, what is Russell Wilson going to do without DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett? Like, those guys are, they are the best wide receiver duo in the NFL, or at least among the conversation for the best wide
receiver. Billy has something to say.
Going into last year, I think you would say that that was one of the two or three best. And I still think they're one of the two or three best. But yeah, Philly, Cincinnati, there's a conversation to be had there.
Yeah, Cincy, obviously.
And I also was a little skeptical about Russell Wilson leaving the Seahawks environment. And, you know, obviously had skepticism about Nate Hackett. But I say this all to say that, yeah, I was skeptical about the Broncos and sort of raised that flag a lot on the podcast. But no, I did not see like the outright disaster.
Nathaniel not even making it a year. Yeah. I'll say this with me with Sutton, I wasn't completely high on him, but I was wish casting a little bit that saying, oh, a year removed from the ACL, has a better quote. Who was throwing the ball to him last year? It's going to be an upgrade. So I was wish casting a little bit with Sutton. I've always liked Judy. I thought that he got a bad rap for a second year when he came out and had the high ankle sprain in week one. High ankle sprains last all year. Like, they just screw you up all year. So I thought he was got to bang out a little too hard for, you know, that season. And oh, now he's a bust. We like this microwave analysis, right? Like, if you're not good by year two, you're a bum. That's not always true. But, and I thought Albert O was going to be good. Nathaniel Hackett obviously didn't agree with me. So I thought the supporting cast was fine. I really did. And I've always been maybe it's from, you know, my days as a Wisconsin alum watching Russell in college. Maybe I've overrated Russell a little bit. I truly thought he was going to be good. I didn't see this working. But you're right. I also did think he played a certain way in Seattle, very much off the script, very much. You know, he had to play this way where the guys knew him. You can't go into a brand new environment and immediately play that way and have everybody on the same page. So I wondered if there was going to be a little transition, but still, yeah, didn't think that was coming with Nathaniel Hackett settling for 64-yard field goals on opening night and stuff. This was a total disaster. And it's just, I'm trying to set the table for talking about this year's teams, because I'm like, what signs do we need to look for that I might have missed with the Broncos? I'm glad you talked about that, with maybe overrating some of the pieces of the offensive cast, because, you know, that certainly did happen with the Broncos last year.
I would say that, like, the three warning signs that we're looking for in terms of who could be this year's Broncos is, one, like we just talked about, like a fundamental misunderstanding of the players on the roster. Like, we're projecting guys into roles that they haven't, like, all of those guys were a projection. Even Jerry Jeudy, who I think right now, Jerry Judy's the best wide receiver on the Denver Broncos roster. And I feel pretty confident in saying that. I don't think he has reached his potential yet. I think that's still a projection right now, but again, like, one, we have to be worried about, we're overrating the talent on the roster. We're overstating who these guys are and the projections that they needed. Number two, I think it's where the big move for whatever this team is not like, there's more potential for downside than we're giving credit for. Russell Wilson, obviously, like, we were not giving the credit that, like, there was a lot of downside for Russell Wilson and a quarterback probably in the second half of his career. Definitely. I think that's being conservative. Like, again, I don't think I was ready to see him fall off the cliff, but I think there was some concern. So that's a warning sign. And then three, like, we talk about Nate Hackett, but that entire Broncos coaching staff was basically brand new, like guys that had never done these jobs before. Not only was Hackett never a head coach, it wasn't a play caller in Green Bay. We know that he had been a play caller previously, but that was, you know, with the Jaguars and like the Blake Bortles year? Bortles?
Blake Bortles garbage time year, I believe.
Right.
The garbage time in Atlanta, wasn't it? Yeah. When he threw for like $4,000 and everybody thought he might be good.
See, I think that was actually like Greg Olsen and Gus Bradley there. But then
that's right.
Dude, there's been so many Jaguars coaching staffs.
Staffs. That ain't going to happen.
But yeah, the intense inexperience of the staff there, like the guys beyond Nathaniel Hackett had never done those jobs before either. Like, Justin Otten was the tight ends coach for the Packers and then became the offensive coordinator. It worked out on the defensive side with Giro Evero. Like, he's now established himself. But yeah, I think that's sort of our three warning signs: inexperience on the coaching staff and you know, throughout like decision makers. The big splashy move of the offseason doesn't, like, there's more downside than giving it credit for. And three, we're overrating the guys on the roster. And it was tough. Like, let me ask you this, Frank, just last thing on the Broncos before we move on to the candidates this year. When did you know, like, oh, this is this is not going to work. Like, was it right after week one when they lost to the Seahawks in the Russell Wilson revenge game and Hackett made that field goal decision? Or did it come like a few days? Like, when did the alarm bells start to go off for you that, like, I got to move off my priors here? And even for me, like, I wasn't that high on this team, but I still was like, I got to move off my priors here. And like, this is an outright disaster, not like, ooh, something I need to be concerned about to start the year.
I mean, there were warning signs, obviously, when they settled for the 64-yard field goal. It was one of the dumbest decisions you could possibly have. But I'm like, rookie coach, he's listening to his kickers. Kicker says, I'm good from here. Okay, he wants to give his guys I'm giving him a little bit of a pass. In week two, when there was just, I think it was the Texans game, game management fiascos everywhere. The crowd is counting down to play clock.
Yeah,
I mean, that's when it was like, oh my goodness, they might be really in over the head. But then I'll be honest with you, I still was like, okay, it's still early. We're talking about two game sample size. They go in and they play Sunday night against the 49ers. And this is funny. That was a win. I was all about the Broncos in that game. I'm like, I was still pretty low on the 49ers, unfortunately, at that point. All in on the Broncos. The Broncos win that game, if you remember, right? It was like 11-7 or something like that. It was something crazy. But they struggled. They had like 8 3 and outs in a row. And I get the San Francisco 49ers. Defense was terrible. But that's the point. Even in a win, where I was like, no, this ain't going to happen. It just isn't going to work. This is not the team I thought it would be. So there's also that you got to be patient a little bit. Sometimes teams just give off the bad starts. They go 0-2. Mm-hmm. It's the NFL. It's tough. But you do have to come to a fork in the road where you say, I'm off of this team. I'm not. We're talking about betting here, by the way. I can't keep putting my money in the Denver Broncos because this is not an investment I want to make.
Yeah, it was like the delusion of Russell Wilson after that game too, saying like, this is championship football. Like, I'm telling the guys, like, this is championship football.
Not, it's like, not even okay, in, like, Russ, the big sky. Like, no, it was not championship.
Right, the big sky Mountain
that
West.
That was such like a bad game. That was one of the worst offensive games I can remember. And then they played maybe even a worse offensive game against Indianapolis a couple weeks later. Just a fiasco of a season. There's going to be probably documentaries on a Denver Broncos team that didn't even have its head coach last a full season. Like, without like some Bobby Petrino, I quit moment. Like, it's unbelievable how bad they were.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And there were some warning signs too with Nate Hackett. It was like, oh, the offense is just going to be whatever Russ wants.
It's he was a little too much of a fanboy. And that this isn't a Denver Broncos podcast, I know, but it's been stunning out here. The difference where Sean Payton's the ego in the room. He don't care. Mm-hmm. It ain't Russell Wilson no more. It's Sean Payton's show. And Sean Payton basically coming in and saying, no, we don't do that around here with me. Like, that ain't where Nathaniel Hackett went one way, where he was just kind of awestruck by Russell Wilson, and we're going to do whatever Russ wants. Sean Payton's kind of going the other way and kind of testing Russ a little bit to say,
yeah,
I'm the sheriff here. We're doing it this way. You don't have an office here anymore. You don't got your boys here anymore. If you want to be on board, you can be on board, but this is the way it's going to run.
All right, so let's move to the candidates for this year. Again, the credentials to kind of get on this list, one, a ton of preseason hype. Two, I also think, like, we're going to see this team a lot. Like, remember how often we saw the Denver Broncos in standalone games? So I think to help your case here is, like, we have a lot of primetime games, which, again, speaks to preseason hype. And number three, all of the reasons that we just mentioned why something could go south quickly. So we came up with a list of 8 candidates. Frank, we're going to narrow that list of 8 down to 3 finalists, and then we're going to collectively, me, you, and if there needs to be a tiebreak, Colin's going to come in here as well, and then we're going to make the pick for who is this year's Denver Broncos. So again, list of 8 candidates, and I'll start us here at number 1, a team we actually mentioned a little bit, the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think need to be considered for this list. And I'll just say, by the way, before we get into this, this is hard, okay? It's much easier on the last podcast, Frank. I'm sorry you get saddled with the difficult episode. On the last podcast to decide who's going to be last year's Jaguars, you know, like for this year.
Easy, yeah.
An exciting team. Like, let's talk about all these teams. It could go so well. This list is harder, and we actually could look like much bigger dumbasses. Very being dumb. Negative than positive.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'll say that.
I mean, you start talking about some of these teams, because if we would have been talking about the Denver Broncos this way last year, people would have been like, you guys stink, you're terrible. What's going to happen to some of these teams where they fall off the cliff and we don't see it coming?
Right. And I'm not including teams like the Chiefs or the Bengals, or like the best of the best, right? I think,
right.
Well, we got a couple teams here. I also noticed,
by the way, I was going to mention it offline, but I'll mention it here. Funny that you did not even bother with the Minnesota Vikings on this list, because we all know how fraudulent their season was last year. Like, there's no way that a 13-4 team, like, oh, they're going to, that would be the biggest cop out ever if we were like, yes, the Minnesota Vikings aren't going to be as good as their 13-4 record last year. Like, everybody knows that. Everybody knows that they're probably like an 8-win quality team from last year.
Well, and you know, I like, now that you say that, I don't know, but they could definitely be a contender for this list. But yeah, let's try to be a little more bold. And let's start with Jacksonville, who I'm actually really high on this year. And, you know, there's a lot of ways that it could go wrong for Jacksonville, but it's so easy to see how it goes right. Right, Frank? Like, they have an ascending young quarterback. That is the thing that you need in the NFL right now. And there's a ton of them in the AFC and Trevor Lawrence. Calvin Ridley, he's definitely a candidate for the biggest move of the offseason. Could go wrong. We haven't seen this guy play in a year and a half. He was great last time we saw him play. He's an incredible, you know, I think true number one receiver, exactly what this offense needs. But that's kind of a pivot point, really, for if the Ridley thing doesn't work out. I think I don't know if the entire house of cards falls down, Frank, but it's at least a starting point to how the Jaguars could be this year's Broncos.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see where you're coming from. They have a lot of offensive line issues too, which you don't really love in an offense. And the Ridley thing, I love Ridley. I think you do too, but we haven't seen him play in so long. And we saw kind of the Le'Veon Bell thing where you take a year off of football. It's not necessarily guaranteed you're just going to pick it right back up. Now, Gronk did, but other guys have, but there's no guarantee. The NFL moves at light speed, and it's possible Calvin Ridley just doesn't look like the same guy. I don't think so, but maybe that's it. And we are also putting a heck of a lot on Trevor Lawrence's shoulders with this projection, right? Like, it's why would we love the Jacksonville Jaguars this year? Name the number two reason. I don't know what it is, because Trevor Lawrence is like 1, 2, and 3 on the list. What if he takes a step back? I mean, I'm not saying he will. What we saw from him late in the season was really, really good, right? I loved what Trevor Lawrence was doing, but we remember his rookie year very up and down. The beginning of last year was up and down, and then he hit a hot streak. Well, what if it's a little more up and down? The Jaguars can't afford it. The Jaguars are so much on his shoulders that if he regresses a little bit, they're going to struggle. Now, the one caveat here is, who the heck in the AFC South would beat them? Like, I mean, unless you are just like Anthony Richardson's going to be Superman from day one, which Chris Ballard has warned us against, then maybe, I guess. But yeah, the Jacksonville Jaguars play in the easiest division. So even their fall would be, you know, I mean, a kind of a Buccaneers division title at 8-9, something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see it going south for them just if Trevor Lawrence doesn't take the next step forward and it's a little bit of a step back.
Yeah, I mean, even the first game in December, week 12 last year, or week 13 for the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, Trevor Lawrence had that 17 for 31, 179 yards and a touchdown game against the Lions. They got worked in Detroit by the Lions.
We didn't know at the time that the Lions was kind of the start of the Lions being good. But yes, you're right. No doubt.
And then obviously the last five games of the regular season, 103 passer rating, 8 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. He was great. He was great to end the season.
I mean, he was just killed. The Cowboys game. Go look at that again. But yes, it's there's no reason that 5-game sample size at the end, 6-game sample size is what Trevor Lawrence is going to be forever.
And I mean, he dug them all the way out of that hole against the Los Angeles Chargers, although the Chargers certainly helped in that matter. But he's also pretty much the one that put them in that hole, or at least he was a big part of it. So, I think, and you know, like, I mean, I love Derek Klassen. Like, he's working for us now at Reception Perception, you know, quarterback charting. He already considers, and I respect his opinion. I respect a lot of quarterback evaluators' opinions who basically like already put Trevor Lawrence as a top 10 quarterback. But I think that's still somewhat of a projection. Going back to the Ridley thing, even if Ridley isn't an elite number one receiver, I still think they're kind of insulated enough with Christian Kirk, with Evan Ingram, even Zay Jones. Like, everybody, theoretically, Ridley comes in, he's the best receiver on the roster. Kirk is a 2. Jones is a 3. Evan Ingram is like a, you know, jack of all trades tight end. You know, Travis Etienne, they bring in Tank Bigsby to compliment him in the run game. Like, it kind of feels like everybody's slotting into where they should be. And then the real reason I don't necessarily want to push the Jaguars into the finalist group here is, like, we talked about Nathaniel Hackett. Like, Doug Peterson is a proven Super Bowl winning head coach. I think he was great in his first year in Jacksonville. So even if Trevor Lawrence doesn't take, you know, if he takes like a small step forward, not a gigantic leap forward, or Ridley's like a good receiver, he's not a great receiver, I think still having Peterson there keeps the floor for this team pretty high. Like, he's a great way of saying it, where like they could win the AFC South in an NFC South style of fashion there this year.
Yeah, this division stinks. It could really, really stink. Like, it's not gonna be good. And to be honest, like, I think we both like the Jaguars this year. We both like Trevor Lawrence. We both like Calvin Ridley. But if you're going to come up with 8 teams who might be the Broncos this year, the Jaguars probably got to be on that list just because of the hype they're getting.
So do they, but do we want to push them to one of the three finalists for now?
I'm cutting them. They're not getting a rose from me. They're cool. Yeah. What if it would be like a black rose or dead rose?
I was
going to
say, not a rose. Okay. That next team here, New York Jets. I think, ironically, they perfectly belonged in last week's conversation of who is going to be this year's Jaguars, a team to go from worst to first. But I think they also definitely belong in this conversation as to who's going to be the Denver Broncos of this year. You know, an overhyped team. And they, I mean, they fit the qualifications perfectly here, at least in terms of their big offseason move could not work out. Aaron Rodgers could not be the guy we think he is. And oh, by the way, there's a connected cast member here. Nathaniel Hackett is also involved with the New York Jets. So, Frank, how are we feeling? He's back, maybe, and maybe better than ever. Probably not, though. New York Jets, do they belong in the finalist group here for this year's Denver Broncos? How could things go wrong for the Jets?
Yeah, and you know, early in the offseason, when it was obvious they were going to trade for Rodgers, I wrote something for Yahoo saying, get your Jets Super Bowl futures right now, because this team could win a Super Bowl. And I believe that. Robert Saleh came out and said, I don't know the exact quote, but something along the lines of, there's 7-8 teams that win a Super Bowl, we're one of them. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I absolutely could see it. But you could also make that case. First of all, we're banking a lot on their defense being just as good as it was last year, right? Like, oh, if they just had a quarterback, look how good the defense was. Defensive prowess is not really sticky from year to year. Football Outsiders has talked about this a lot, and it's true. It's hard to be a top five defense year after year after year. As weird as that sounds to say, it fluctuates a lot more. So what if the Jets go from being really top five defense to 12th best defense, right? Mm-hmm. Then you're looking at the offense and you're saying, can they, just because you've added Aaron Rodgers, can they keep it up? Now, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers, because I go back and forth. I think he's still good, but he's not the MVP anymore. He's not going to be that guy. He turns 40 this year. And the only guy who has really excelled into his 40s is Tom Brady. And we all just think that's a new rule, right? I go, oh, Tom Brady did it. That means Aaron Rodgers is going to do it too. One guy in, what are we at, 104 years of NFL history has done that. It's Tom Brady. He's a freak. He's an absolute freak for his age. Most guys hit the wall at age 40 or 39 or 38. I think Montana, Elway, all those guys retired at age 38. What's to say Aaron Rodgers doesn't hit the wall this year? Brand new environment, just like Russell Wilson a little bit, not same age, but brand new environment. And Rodgers also doesn't seem to me like the Tom Brady. I'm all in. I'm going to be here every single day, even though it's COVID, getting guys together, learning to play, but getting my offense really involved with the Buccaneers here. I don't know that Rodgers has that in him right now. He even talked about, I thought I was going to retire. And then, you know, this happened to the Packers. And but I don't know if he's really all in. And that's a warning sign to me. So while I like the Jets a lot, I do. And I'm going to be picking them for a lot of good things, over win totals and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you can make the definite argument that this is this year's Broncos simply because there's so many parallels to draw between Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. And I do think it seems like Rodgers is pretty almost all the way all in. You know, he's been there for OTAs. He's been there. I mean, he's been a little banged up, but he's been doing the things like throwing with receivers and stuff. You know, he's been kind of there to teach the offense. And but the parallels, not just for, oh, like a veteran quarterback falls off, but you know, we remember when Matt LaFleur initially got to Green Bay, there was a lot of push and pull between what does Rodgers want to do and what does Matt LaFleur want the offense to be. And, you know, Rodgers has said he doesn't like turning his back to the defense. He doesn't like the under center play action. He doesn't like all that motion before the snap. And we just talked about Nate Hackett as a guy who completely acquiesced to the quarterback last year. Yeah. And it always feels, even going into the Broncos head coaching hire, it always felt like the biggest feather in Nate Hackett's hat was Aaron Rodgers liked to hang out with him, or like he could make fun of, like Aaron Rodgers could like poke fun at him.
It's the Adam Gase Peyton Manning thing. Like he just, once Adam Gase had the Peyton Manning seal of approval, he got two jobs he never deserved. Yeah.
Right. But it wasn't even like Peyton seemed to like Adam Gase's offense and all that part of it. just seems like, oh, he likes Nate Hackett. And they could talk about Jeopardy and stuff. Like it seems, I'm not sure exactly what. And look, I mean, Aaron Rodgers probably knows and he just hasn't told us. I mean, whatever, that's certainly possible. But at least from a public standpoint, I'm not sure what Aaron Rodgers loves about Nate Hackett, the schemer, the offensive play designer, the play caller, more so than just like he likes him as a dude. So there's a lot of volatility here. I will say, like, what do I think about Rodgers? Rodgers, I think there's been a little bit of revisionist history on how bad he was last year. He certainly wasn't MVP caliber Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, again, similar to what we talked about with the wide receivers leaving or Russell Wilson leaving those wide receivers. Like, we spent a lot of time last year, Frank, talking about what is Davante Adams going to be like without Aaron Rodgers, and not a lot of conversation time spent on what is Aaron Rodgers going to be with not just not Davante Adams, but like a bunch of rookies, basically. Like, Sammy Watkins was their veteran receiver last year, like veteran receiver edition. And I mean, dude, Sammy Watkins, I'm not trying to be mean here, but he was not like. That was rough. He was not like in shape.
It was bad.
And then, you know, Romeo Doubs like showed that he could play in the NFL, but he was a day three rookie that dropped a ton of passes. Yep. Christian Watson was like a raw rookie last year. I think Rodgers did a lot of elevating for those guys last year. And at least right now, I don't think this Jets receiver core, like, I'm certainly not talking about Garrett Wilson, Alan Lazard, Corey Davis in the same breath as the receivers we debated there with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. But I think it's a better room because Garrett Wilson could take that leap to superstar status than Rodgers was dealing with last year, at least.
Yeah. With Rodgers, it's just one of those things where he wasn't bad last year, but he was coming off back-to-back MVPs and the play clearly slipped. And
yes,
I don't care how often the cameras found him gesturing madly at his receivers after every single incompletion.
Could be the thumb injury too. We also it should acknowledge the thumb injury too. Yeah.
But he missed passes last year. He just normal. And does that get better at age 40? No, it doesn't. It's not going to come back. Like, whatever Aaron Rodgers is going to be, that's the level's not going to come back up, I don't think. It's just going to be who he is. And it might be totally fine if he's a top 12 quarterback in this league, which he should be. And that defense is still really good. And Garrett Wilson is awesome. And Breece Hall comes back healthy. And all these things go right for the Jets. They do have that Super Bowl upside. But I do think you talk about the thumb injury with Aaron Rodgers and the calf injury because he's in New York now and it's a big story. Got way overblown. Who cares about a calf injury in May? But the point is, he's 40. Injuries are going to happen with this guy. It's hard for me to believe he gets through this season, especially without a great offensive line intact. So that's another reason. Look, if Aaron Rodgers starts missing games, the Jets ain't winning nothing. Like, we've seen what they have in the bullpen, and it ain't going to be good. So
that's it's still another Zach part Wilson. Of the I mean, yeah, that's crazy. It's
unbelievable. Unbelievable. So
we've already seen him. We've already seen him in camp, right? Like, that's nuts to me that we're one like little Rodgers calf tweak where it's like, look at these passes, Zach Wilson, because he's just such a toxic figure. I don't know. It's wild to me.
Yeah, but the locker room would turn again. It would, if Rodgers misses time, this Jets team is, they're going to be so deflated. And so that's part of the problem with projecting this year's Jets is if Rodgers misses time, there's no plan B here.
What do you think about Robert Saleh, like the coach and culture builder? Because we've mentioned Nate Hackett a lot, and you know he's obviously the offensive coordinator, but this is still Robert Saleh's team. How are you feeling about Robert Saleh and where he stands at this point? Like, if there starts to be some rockiness on this ship, you know, when the Broncos started taking on water, it was like Nate Hackett was not getting out there with a bucket and like shoveling that water out of there. He was like, you know, running, making it worse. He was poking more holes in the boat. Where does Robert Saleh stand on that scale?
I feel a lot more confident in him after last season. I thought he kept a lot of things together when there was a lot of strife and you're playing without a quarterback basically. But a year before, I mean, he came into last season on the hot seat. I thought that 2021 season did not go well. And I was questioning whether he was the guy, but I feel a little more confident in him now, but yeah, we'll see. I mean, if this would be a different deal. If you bring in Aaron Rodgers and you're 1-4, that's a different deal to handle than just, we're trying to manage between Joe Flacco and Zach Wilson, a quarterback. It'd be a different type of firestorm you'd have to deal with.
Maybe it feels like I'm walking both sides of the fence or I'm sitting both sides of the fence here, but because I put the Jets among my three finalists for who could be this year's Jaguars on the last episode, but we've said so many ifs for the Jets this year, I kind of feel like they belong in the three finalists for this year, for this year's Broncos. Do you agree or disagree, Frank? Do you want to put them finalists or do you want to keep
them? Yeah, I'm sending them to the finals here. As much as I remember, I got that Super Bowl ticket. Don't really want to start tearing that one up, but I'm going to send it. Yeah, I got to send it to the final round here.
Sit on both sides of the fence here with me, Frank.
one quick note to maybe help you guys with this decision. Frank, I think you mentioned a hypothetical of them going 1-4. Looking at the Jets' early schedule, it's pretty brutal. So they start with Buffalo, that Monday night game. They go to Dallas. Mm. I think they have an easier game with New England, but it's a rivalry game. Then Kansas City, then Denver, then Philly. I think two and four is super realistic. So what?
And if you do blow one of those Denver New England games, which isn't a gimme, I mean, it's not just like they're going to roll over for you. Yeah, you're right. They could find themselves in a hole pretty quickly.
And they have five primetime games overall, which again, we're going to be, we saw a lot of the Broncos. We're going to be seeing a lot of the New York Jets. So I think they do belong on this list here. All right. Next team up. And this one's going to cut at me because I am in on the Baltimore Ravens hype, but I do think they need to belong in this year's Denver Broncos. Look, they made coaching changes. Greg Roman's out, Todd Monken's in. I think that is a upgrade at the offensive coordinator position, or at least I guess whether it's an upgrade or not is not important. What it is a needed breath of fresh air on the offensive side of the football. They bring in Odell Beckham. They bring in Zay Flowers. If Rashad Bateman's healthy, this is a receiver core that I think is unlike anything that Lamar Jackson has played with. I love this receiver room on paper. On paper is a key word for the Baltimore Ravens because they have not kept a lot of dudes on the field the last few years. I mean, I think John Harbaugh is a great coach, and I think he kept a lot of things afloat last year. Like Bateman banged up, Andrews banged up, J.K. Dobbins never really getting off on the right foot last year, Lamar Jackson banged up. So I think if healthy, there's a lot of potential for this Ravens team. Frank, where do you come down on the Ravens here?
Yeah, the same thing. There's a reason we're talking about them. They're a good team. They're getting a lot of hype. But you can see the downsides here. And for once, there's a lot of holes on this defense, especially up front. Mm-hmm. They're not what they used to be. Who's their stud up front, really? And even the cornerback position, a little bit in flux. Now they got some good safeties, and they got Marlon Humphrey coming back too. Rocky Asin, I thought, was a good signing for them because they needed it. Their cornerback room was really thin before that. But then you turn to the offense, and I think we all were sick of the Greg Roman offense. Even Lamar Jackson seemed sick of the Greg Roman offense.
Yeah.
Who's to say the Todd Monken offense is going to be better? I like Todd Monken as an offensive coordinator. That does not mean it's going to fit with what Lamar does. Here's why. I thought that, when you talk about the 32 teams and the 32 quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson is different than everybody else. And I don't say it in a bad way. He just is. We've all seen him play. You have to cater your offense to his strengths. And he has a ton of strengths, and he's a great player, a perennial MVP candidate if he's healthy. It doesn't mean Todd Monken's going to know what to do with him. Maybe part of the reason Greg Roman's offense was stale was because he said, in his mind, I have to cater this offense a certain way. I can't really expand it too much because we've all talked about Lamar not being great outside the numbers passing the ball. And now Monken wants to come in with a lot of vertical stuff. And is that just going to click right away? I don't know. I have faith in Lamar Jackson as a player, and he's going to be happy now that he's paid and all that kind of stuff. But there is the possibility it just does not fit with him. And then you talk about the receivers. Great on paper, right? Well, we haven't seen Odell Beckham play since the Super Bowl 2 seasons ago. Zay Flowers is a rookie. All rookies struggle. Rashad Bateman can't stay on the field as much as I like his talent. This could go really sideways for them at receiver again. And this offense just struggles. And then the defense might not be that top 10 defense we're used to with the Ravens.
Yeah, like then we're looking at Nelson Aguilar, and they signed Laquon Treadwell this week. Like,
Don't do that.
Right. Like, we're looking at maybe that's the receiver core. Again, on paper right now, it looks awesome, but
yeah. But I could talk myself out of it too if you really want to.
They fired their strength coach, which maybe that helps. It seemed like everybody hated that dude in terms of like them continuing to get injuries and everything. So, Bateman spoke out about that stuff. Like Bateman, is a guy who hadn't dealt with a bunch of injuries. And ever since he's been with the pro team here at the Baltimore Ravens, he's been consistently banged up. Yeah, I love this offense on paper. And the Lamar thing, I come down sort of in the middle on Lamar Jackson, where I think some folks in the media really, really go to bat for Lamar Jackson and sort of just yada yada his flaws. But then I think there are some, and most of this comes from like unnamed league sources and people within the NFL, really are hard, way too hard on Lamar, being that he's like a just this system fit type of guy. Even if I'm right and like the center of that argument is the truth, I think that this offense is going to work, but you're right to raise some of those concerns here. So, and you're also right too, Frank, to say that this defense on paper doesn't look like the unit that we're used to. I think they successfully transitioned away from Wink Martindale to Mike McDonald last year. By the way, those two guys just sound like they should be in like a Motown band somewhere, or, something like they should, I don't know, but it's like a headlining event, you know, in Detroit somewhere or something like that. But those two guys, I think they made that, like Mike McDaniel, they made that transition last year on the defensive side of the football, but it's still on paper. It's not the same unit. So I don't know. I'm glad that we're having this conversation because I so badly want to just say, no, Ravens don't belong in this conversation. It's going to work out, but the downside is certainly there. So do we want to push them into the finalist group or not?
I'm not. I think the floor is so high that John Harbaugh's a great coach. He just is. Right. He kind of gets overshadowed because he came along with Belichick when Belichick winning all the titles. But John Harbaugh's a Hall of Fame coach. So I think that their floor is pretty high. I don't see this being like some 5-12 disaster like the Broncos. So I can't put them in the finalist range. But yeah, I can see it being a little bit of a kind of a disappointing season in Baltimore.
Could totally. I mean, look, they're in a division that's going to be tough really this tough. Year. We are going to talk about
a good season. Cincinnati, yep. Cleveland. We're going to talk about them, but they should be good, I guess.
Yeah. So if they're second in the division, with like a 9-8 type of record, yeah. I don't think that would surprise anybody just because it's a competitive division. But yeah, I'm with you that John Harbaugh is the reason I'm not going to put them in, yeah. as a final. I don't want to fight for them as a finalist because I mean, he is a great coach. We're kind of in like the third chapter of the John Harbaugh Ravens, which was like, there was the Joe Flacco, like, let me get all the veterans on board with me as a new head coach. You know, this like Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, those guys were still there when John, which is crazy. That's how long John Harbaugh's been there. Those guys were still playing pretty good football towards the end of their careers when Harbaugh took over. Then there was the let's transition from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson, a dramatic transition. And now we're doing sort of a third transition here, which is like, let's get the second chapter of Lamar Jackson's career on track here. And I think Harbaugh's the man to, he's already successfully navigated two. Can he successfully navigate the third? I would bet on yes, he's going to at least keep that floor pretty high. Next one here, Dallas Cowboys. Colin, no chiming in until the end. Producer Colin is a notorious Dallas fan. So I'll let him defend his Cowboys here at the end. But I think they have to be considered for this one, Frank, just because I like a lot of what Dallas did on paper this year. They trade for Stephon Gilmore, bargain. They trade for Brandon Cooks, bargain. Mm-hmm. But those guys are veterans. You know, we don't know where they are. I think Cooks is a perfect missing piece for what the Cowboys needed last year. But you know, he's again, veteran player, yada, yada, Stephon Gilmore, veteran player there too. There's potential for those moves to not work out as much as I don't like them. Or as much as I like them, I like the players on Dallas's roster, especially on offense. I think CeeDee Lamb is a superstar receiver. He's in that tier now. I think Michael Gallup is going to bounce back from the ACL, ruined season last year. I think Tony Pollard is going to be a very good player, but again, maybe Gallup doesn't bounce back like we talked about with Courtland Sutton.
Yep.
Tony Pollard, maybe he's not really ready to be like a full time feature back, and they've got like Ronald Jones and Deuce Vaughn behind him. Like I think they need another dimension there in their run game. And oh, by the way, as much as we like Dan Quinn in the defense, Mike McCarthy is calling the plays. Like Mike McCarthy is calling the plays. That is like anytime you want to get too excited about the Dallas Cowboys. Where are we at with Mike McCarthy, you know, and where he is in this whole thing. So I think there are certainly real concerns about the Cowboys, even though on paper, man, this is a really good roster and should be a very good team.
I just have to be maybe a little contrarian here. I don't think the Cowboys should be on this list. I don't think there's really any chance that they're a disaster this year outside of like Dak getting hurt week one. But even that happened last year and they were fine. Like, right. Like this is a good, solid team. Every time I look at them, I'm like, I get why people want to dunk on the Cowboys. And let's be honest, the Mike McCarthy, when he's talking about, I don't want to score any of these fancy points. I just want to rest my defense. Like it's the most insane quote I've heard in many years since, remember when John Gruden came back and he's like, I'm throwing the game back to 1994. Like he never lived down that quote. He never. And Mike McCarthy is never going to live down that quote. Every time the offense struggles in a game, people could be like, well, is that what you want? You could get 16 points today, Mike. Is that the offense you envision? So it was a dumb quote, but I think that the only reason I really worry is I think Kellen Moore is much better play caller than Mike McCarthy. That's it. Like, but I still think Mike McCarthy gets hounded a little bit too much. If you really truly look at his record, it's good. Like he has been good. Yeah. Everybody loves criticizing him for some reason, and that's fine. But he's better than he gets credit for. So I don't even think that's really setting off that many alarm bells for me. I think this Cowboys team is just good. The other thing I did want to mention. They've had a great turnover rate on defense the last couple of years. that is not something that usually carries over. It hasn't for 2 years in a row, so maybe it just won't. Maybe this is just a big play of defense. It keeps going. But what if the turnovers really, really regress? Yeah, what if the regression police hit some, the pendulum swings a little too far? Then maybe the defense struggles. But I just don't see it. I think this Cowboys team is just, they're good. They are what they are. They're, to me, a double-digit win team, and that's what they're going to be.
And if you're talking about, like, the best non-quarterbacks in the NFL, I think Micah Parsons has to make your top five list. Like, he is such a good player. I mean, not even just what he does as a pass rusher. He's a great run defender. He's incredible. He is a straw that stirs the drink type of guy. So even if some of the other aspects of that defense regresses, as long as he's on the field, this defense is going to be pretty good. And same thing with Dak from a quarterback position. If he's on the field, this offense is going to be pretty good. And I'm with you on Mike McCarthy. And there is a lot of Packers fans that will correctly point out that he used to say that same stuff in Green Bay. And then almost like frustratingly would just throw slant flat. So, you know, like he would really stay like, and a lot of these, Gruden's a great example too, that he didn't throw the game back to 1998. They were a pretty, these guys say this stuff and then they never really do it. And I'm also sort of in the middle of, was Kellen Moore was he unfairly maligned and it was all Mike McCarthy? Well, I think it could be the other way around too, where some of Kellen's conservative tendencies and some of the route designs that he had kept over from Scott Linehan. That marriage could be more so on Mike's side too. So I'm kind of with you. I'm not itching to put the Cowboys here, and I don't think Colin is either, but Colin, I will let you chime in here on your Cowboys.
No, I think everything Frank said, I obviously agree with, but I do think Mike calling plays is a concern. I do think the musical chairs on the offensive line is a concern as well. It sounds like they're going to put Tyron Smith at left tackle and Tyler Smith back at left guard, at least for the minicamp this week. Yeah. But that is a house of cards if one or two of those guys go down. When they lost Terrence Steele towards the end of last year to a torn ACL, which, by the way, he's looking to come back from, the running game really did take a hit, whether it was Tony Pollard or Zeke Elliott. I think the thing that Mike McCarthy, the concern is he's been a decent CEO overmanaging the team, but he's still struggled in game management situations. What's going to happen in close games when he's calling plays and has to game manage? I frankly have zero trust in his ability in those close games. I also, though, think that this Dallas team is talented enough to overcome some of that coaching deficiencies from Mike McCarthy. I really, everything Frank said. Like, the other thing, too, is like, it's not talked about enough. This is a team that's going to win with their defense more than their offense this year. This is the best defense. As a Cowboys fan, and I've been a Cowboys fan, I was joking with Frank before the show, since the Quincy Carter days, this is the best defense on paper, most complete defense I've ever seen. Their biggest issue last year was run defense, and that's why they invested what they did in Mozzie Smith, who does not need to be a pass rusher. They have plenty of those. If he could just be a guy that takes up space, he's going to free up stuff for Micah, for Tank, and I think an emerging star in Sam Williams at edge. So I think the floor for this team is like 10-7. And I'm trying not to be biased, but I feel like that's all valid and real takes, not crazy Cowboy fandom.
I think they could go 9-8 or 8-9, something like that. But that still wouldn't qualify them really. I agree with you that the talent is too good for them to completely bottom out, even if Mike McCarthy is like a stone cold disaster. So none of us want to push them forward to the finalist group here. So, yeah, the Cowboys are safe. They are not this year's Denver Broncos. Next team here, Detroit Lions. Look, we know the hype is real. They're playing damn week one against Kansas City Chiefs. They have four primetime games overall. People are excited about the Detroit Lions. I think, Frank, the easy pessimism case, like the offseason moves of the Lions don't work out. They made these two picks in the first round on non-premium positions. Like, even if Jahmyr Gibbs really works out, it's like, okay, you've got a little flashier, a little bit better in the run game and as the outlet receiver, but that's not great. Like how much is that really going to move the needle for you? Your first round pick from a year ago, Jameson Williams, is not going to play the first six games. And I continue to think that's a huge problem for them, because I love Amon-Ra St. Brown, but they don't have anybody really on the outside. I'm not a big DJ Chark fan, but it's like, they don't even have DJ Chark anymore. Like that's a problem area for the Detroit Lions. They're counting on like Sam LaPorta to be an instant day one hit at tight end. That doesn't happen very often. By the way, Jared Goff is the quarterback. Like I like Jared Goff as a average starting NFL quarterback, maybe even slightly above, in the Alex Smith-ish zone, but Jared Goff's gonna have to do some more heavy lifting to push this team to where they want to go. I think I'm skeptical of that, even if this is a very good situation. So generally I'm in on the Lions taking a leap, but I think it's also very easy to paint the picture to where this doesn't work out. Where do you stand?
I mean, look, they had a lot of hype last year. They were, if I remember correctly, the most bet over at BetMGM for their win total, the most bet team to win their division at BetMGM before the season. And then they started 1-6. They didn't handle that hype very well. And everybody likes to talk about the way they ended. And they were great at the end of the year. We saw, you know, week 18, they beat the Packers, blah, 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 knocked the Jaguars around. They're still the team that went 1-6. You can't just dismiss half of it and hold on to the last half. They did struggle out of the gate. And I agree with it, basically everything you said. We don't need to spend too much time rehashing your takes. Jared Goff is still Jared Goff. They don't have really a stretcher on this offense, mm-hmm. where Jameson Williams is supposed to be the guy, you know, kind of loosening up the defense. They don't have that guy right now. Amon Ross is great, but he's not that guy. And then also, is the defense tough enough? They added to the defense, but this defense was pretty bad last year. Are they better? Is the cornerback all fixed? Maybe it is. I generally like the Lions. And let's be honest, if this was any other franchise, basically, we'd be buying in a lot more. But there's still something in the back of our heads saying, this is the Detroit freaking Lions. They have not won a division title since 1993, when it was still the NFC Central. Like, it's hard to wrap our heads around the Detroit Lions being this huge favorite in the division, which it should be, actually. But yes, you can absolutely tell yourself a story where they didn't maximize their two first-round picks. They do still have Jared Goff at quarterback. They don't have the right mix in the passing game, because maybe Sam LaPorta isn't as good as TJ Hockenson should have been right away. There's a lot of ways that this could go a little bit south for the Lions, and anything other than a division title this year, it has to be considered a disappointment for that team.
I'm so glad you brought up, too, that they are still the same team that went 1-7 and the same team that went, or whatever it was, and then finished the season 1-6, and the team that finished the season strong. And just because one happened more recently than the other doesn't, like, this is where we get ourselves in trouble projecting year over year, for whether it's teams or players. Like, I've got people in my mentions today, like, well, Jerry Jeudy was the wide receiver, this, that, and the other in the final 4 weeks of the season. It's like, okay, but he's still the same player that he was in the first chapter of the season as well. Like, this, we get in trouble thinking that the most recent result, like hot end of season finishes for teams and players, is just going to immediately carry over into next year, which I think does put the Lions in the danger zone. So I'm enthusiastic about the Lions. I buy what I buy Ben Johnson as offensive coordinator. Yes. Generally buy what Dan Campbell is selling there. I think Brad Holmes is a good GM, even if you can pick nits at these last two couple first round picks. But there's a lot of warning signs with the Lions here too. So do they belong in our list of three finalists here?
Yes, I'm going to put them in the finalists, just because, again, probably just because it's the Lions. I hate to do that to Lions fans. Yeah. I love the Lions fans. They're passionate and all that, but we all know that the Lions are the Lions.
Okay, next team up here. This is our spiciest one. San Francisco 49ers as this year's Denver Broncos. And I don't need to spend a lot of time here telling you how it doesn't work out. I got two letters for you. QB. Mm-hmm. This is a team that is going into this season considered one of the favorites in their conference, and we don't know who's going to play quarterback in week one. We don't know who's going to play quarterback in like any point of the season. Like Trey Lance, there's, you know, 49ers, the Twitter is at war with each other over Trey Lance, like mini camp videos and stuff like that. We know the story with Trey Lance. And we're talking two guys here who have been high on Trey Lance, you and I. Brock Purdy, we don't know if he's going to be ready, but it seems like they want him to be the guy. It's a little bizarre that they're so bought into the Brock Purdy thing and really kind of not even giving Trey Lance a chance. There's also every now and again a weird stray, a wild Sam Darnold hype quote appears or whatever, you know? So that's the reason why this couldn't work out. We could say other things like D'Amico Ryan's leaving, Steve Wilkes in. What does that defensive transition work like? But the real thing is, like, this whole house of cards could fall down if the quarterback was, I guess, even though Kyle Shanahan has sort of built a seemingly quarterback proof offense, we still saw, like, you can run out of rope here with how far you can push that.
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't remember, look, they're tied in the NFC for the highest win total with the Eagles. I can't remember a team being this highly thought of and having no idea who their quarterback's gonna be. Literally, if we were to put odds on which quarterback's gonna be their quarterback week one, they're probably all about equal, and none of them's a favorite, and none of them's really that appealing. And the whole like, well, Brock Purdy might be available, you know, there for week one. We're talking about a guy who called. I'm not sold that he's next Tom Brady, Tony Romo, totally. Kurt Warner. Like, he caught light, he caught fire for a few weeks. He played well. I'm not taking anything away from. But is that it is a pretty small sample. Is he just able to pick that up, especially coming off a serious elbow injury? I don't know how that injury affects him. Like, if he loses a couple miles an hour on that fastball, ain't good for him. So we don't know that Purdy's just going to be picking up. And I'm the guy who won all seven of my starts, which is a fake stat anyway, because quarterbacks don't win games.
Yeah.
So I'm not sold on Purdy. Darnold is Darnold. Trey Lance hasn't barely played football in 4 years. Why are we just automatically assuming the San Francisco 49ers, without a quarterback at this moment, are just going to walk to an NFC West title? They might. They were great last year in many aspects of the game. But as you said, I don't dismiss the whole DeMeco Ryans for Steve Wilks thing. Steve Wilks is a very good coach. I do like him, but DeMeco was excellent. He knew exactly. He was a conductor for that defense. Really, really good. Buying all the stock in DeMeco Ryans that I can going forward. And they also lost a ton of guys in free agency. Mike McGlinchey leaves. Like, all these guys are big time deals, right? McGlinchey, Ekubom, Jimmy Ward's a good safety, Amenhue. I mean, they lost guys who other teams paid a ton of money to. So these are good players. They lost a lot of those guys. It's not the same roster. This team wasn't great for the first half of last year. They're good. They're good, but they really caught on fire at the end of last year. What if they can't just quite replicate that? What if the quarterback situation doesn't work out? I think there's a lot more questions with the 49ers than really a lot of people are giving credit for.
Yeah, and like the DeMeco Ryans thing too, he was a guy that grew up in that system. You know, a guy who had played recently.
Exactly,
Been in the building, had been around the guys. Yep. And that Steve was a Wilks big...
might be a great coach, but now it's different. It's not just handing the baton over. It's a totally different thing that he's going to have to get accustomed to.
And he seems like a great culture builder, vibe builder, based on the last few weeks in Carolina there, Steve Wilks. But that was certainly what DeMeco Ryans, in addition to designing a great defense overall, he was also a very big vibes guy, that's for sure. Yeah. So that's a concern. The Brock Purdy thing, like, you can't say two things here. You can't say like, oh yeah, Brock Purdy is the next Tony Romo, but also Kyle Shanahan builds a quarterback proof offense, so it's no big deal, because you're admitting that a lot of that heavy lifting is Kyle Shanahan there. And I think Brock Purdy was, whether he's going to become the next Tony Romo or Tom Brady or whatever, he was better than Jimmy Garoppolo and elevated that team, I think, to ways that Jimmy Garoppolo did not. But I don't know. It's a concern. However, Frank, I don't know if you want to push them into the finalist group here. The reason I'm hesitant to do it is for two reasons. One, I think Kyle Shanahan, he's not a perfect head coach, but he is a good head coach. And he is a great offensive designer. So even if we get like a few games of Darnold and Trey Lance and Purdy eventually like is recovered from the elbow, because that's a huge, like, it's inarguable that Josh Allen, some of the struggles to end last year was the elbow, like, and Purdy's coming from back from an elbow injury.
Ben Roethlisberger, same deal. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger was a million years old, but I mean,
Jake DeLome, never forget Jake DeLome. So even if that's a problem, I still think they can elevate. And the skill position dudes, like we talked about overrating the guys in Denver, Ayuk is like a top 10 receiver in the NFL. I think he's in that range. He's so good. Debo Samuel's one of the most unique weapons in the NFL. George Kittle's a stud. Christian McCaffrey is still there. So if those guys are healthy, I know they've dealt with injuries. It's hard for me to imagine this team totally bottoming out, even though I think they could certainly be like a 9-8, 8-9 type team if things went really disastrously. But do you want to push them into the finalists? I'm a little hesitant.
It's scary, but I'm going to. Yeah, I'm going to put them in.
Okay.
Again, repeating what you did, like, I don't think they're going to be 5-12 like the Broncos. Okay. There's different sliding scales here where I think everybody assumes like that the 49ers could be the second best team in the NFC. And we'll see. We'll see.
Okay. So we have three finalists right now: Jets, Lions, 49ers. The last two teams for my contenders here were the Seattle Seahawks or the Cleveland Browns. I think the Browns might be cheating a little bit because they weren't, well, I mean, the Broncos weren't good the year before, but I think everybody's sort of projecting that Watson is going to take another step, but maybe he doesn't. There's obvious risk there why they could be very disappointing and they could totally bottom out. Maybe some of their offseason moves don't work out. You know, Nick Chubb takes the feature back role. I think that's good. Kevin Stefanski, maybe he tops out as a head coach. There's risk there. The Seahawks, I put on this this list, but dude, I don't buy the Seahawks being this year's Broncos at all, because similar to what we talked about the Ravens, we're kind of in the third chapter of the Pete Carroll run here, and he's remade the identity of the Seahawks so many different ways. Even if Geno, it's a slight risk with Geno that he just completely regresses, I don't really think he's going to, because this is an awesome situation with a two deep backfield. I just talked about at the top of the show, I think DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett have to be discussed in terms of the best wide receiver duo in the NFL. And then they add the best receiver from the draft to that room.
There's one of the top three running backs too. Yeah. I mean, yes, I disagreed with the pick. I'm sure you did too. I haven't heard your take on, but he's still putting Walker and Charbonnet together. It's not bad. Like, it's still going to be pretty good running game for them.
So I don't know. I think because the Browns are like cheating a little bit and the Seahawks, I don't buy it. Do you think either of those two teams should replace one of the Jets, Lions, 49ers before we vote on who's going to be this year's Broncos?
I don't. We do have to acknowledge that it's possible we wake up on about Halloween and say, yeah, I guess Geno Smith, we could all see he was just a pumpkin and the clock was going to strike midnight at some point. It's possible. I don't think that's going to happen, but it could. It's still Geno Smith. And this was a kind of uncharted territory for him being this level of a quarterback. The Browns, I guess it just depends if you think Watson's just not going to be great again. And I guess there's an argument to be made for that, but I generally think he's not an easy guy to root for. Let's put it that way. But
yeah,
I generally think he's going to be a good quarterback this year. And if he is, the Browns around him are very strong if they stay injury free. So no, neither of these teams I think are going to really fall off a cliff.
Yeah. The Browns, the only thing that, like, we had a conversation about them as potentially, you know, this year's Jaguars on the last episode, but the reason I ended up talking myself out of that so much was that their division is tough. It's like, somebody's got to finish fourth in the AFC North. Yeah. It's definitely not going to be the Bengals if Joe Burrow plays all 17 games. I have a tough time imagining it's going to be the Ravens if Lamar Jackson plays all 17 games. The Steelers could certainly be that, but I think there's some optimism around them. So it's like, there's certainly a lot of risk that Cleveland finishes with the worst record of all of the teams that we just talked about here. So I don't know. I would push them into the finalist group here, but I'm going to leave it as Jets, Lions, 49ers, because I think that's more compelling than like, ooh, who's going to be the brave soul to say that the Deshaun Watson Cleveland Browns is going to fall off the cliff. Yeah. So, all right, we've got three finalists, Jets, Lions, 49ers. Frank, I want you to rank these three teams in terms of most and least likely to be this year's Denver Broncos. Then I'll do it. And if we don't have consensus on who the number one team is, Colin will break the tie.
Okay. I'll start with the least. I do think it's the Lions. I struggle to even put the Lions here because I think they're good. I think, yes, there's questions and there's this way, that way that this could go south for them. But I do kind of have faith in the Lions, which is a scary, scary thing to say. I don't know if I'm going to regret that, but I think the Lions will be fine while acknowledging that there's ways this goes south. And I think my next least likely is I'm going to say the Jets. I trust this Jets team for some reason. And that means I think the 49ers. What am I doing to myself here, Matt? Oh. I'm just opening myself up for you to play this in November when they're 11-1 and being like, you doubted this 49ers team. Really? Did you not watch them last year? But this quarterback situation and just a little, again, pieces they missed, a little bit on the defense, Mike McGlinchey, a lot of guys who other teams thought this guy's worth $8 million a year. This guy's worth $10 million a year. Though the 49ers lost those guys. I think the 49ers are my number one candidate to be this year's Denver Broncos, although not like to the Nathaniel Hackett levels maybe. But hey, if this team does somehow, some way go 7-10, it's the same type of disaster for them, right, given the expectation.
Right. I think that's true. I have a tough time imagining them picking like a top five in the draft next year. Like the Broncos should have been. Weren't. Also, do the 49ers have a first round pick next year? Or are they still?
I think they're out of the Trey Lance side.
Okay.
And that's a part of it too.
Right.
Their draft was horrible. They got nothing out of the draft this year.
They drafted a kicker.
They took a kicker. Their draft was, Football Outsiders gathers up all the grades, right? The 49ers were number 32 in those grades, whatever you want to think of them, by a mile. They're getting nothing out of the draft this year. They've had thin drafts because the Trey Lance thing didn't work out. These things do come back to haunt you at some point in the NFL.
Yeah. No, it's fair. They obviously dealt a bunch of picks for Christian McCaffrey, which helped them last year. But
Christian McCaffrey hasn't exactly been the model of health either. Like, was last year. He played most of the season, but
other than Ayuk, none of these guys that we're talking about, correct, like from like these superstar skill position players. Kittle has missed time. Debo has missed time. Mm-hmm. McCaffrey has missed time. Like
Elijah Mitch has ever misses, you know, three out of every four games. Yeah.
Like there's definitely a Dalton Del Don, please turn the podcast off, but there is definitely a nightmare scenario where because of injuries, week six, we're looking at like Sam Darnold handing off to Jordan Mason and throwing passes to Juwan Jennings and the tight end that they, I can't remember his name, but the tight end that they took in the first round or they took in the draft this year from like, whatever. Was it a Stanford tight end? I don't even remember. So there's a nightmare scenario where injuries hit this team. We've seen nightmare scenarios where injuries hit this team before. At the same time though, Frank, my list is the complete reverse of yours. And maybe I'm just a coward where I think the least likely is the San Francisco 49ers, because I think they have the best head coach of this trio.
Easily.
I think they have the best head coach of this trio. I think they also have the best roster of this trio too. I think they have an all-star left tackle in Trent Williams, who's older, but anchors a very good offensive line that exceeded expectations last year. Ayuk, Debo, like even if they do suffer an injury to one of these guys, well, it's like, okay, we don't have Debo Samuel, then we can throw the rock to Brandon Ayuk 10 times a game because he is that good. If Ayuk misses time, now this offense can just revolve around George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey. There's so much room for error, I think, from a health perspective here where there has not been previously. Obviously, the quarterback thing is a huge question mark, but I do think Kyle Shanahan's offense is so good that as long as it is one of a 90% of what we got last year, Purdy, Trey Lance, or even Sam Darnold, because the setup is so good, I think they can get like league average quarterback play. As long as we don't go any further than that. Okay. As long as we don't go any further than that, like in terms of who plays, I think the floor and the defense, I do trust Steve Wilks. If they were going from like D'Amico Ryans to some other rando defensive coordinator, it would be a bigger problem to me than a guy who has shown to be a good defensive coordinator. So I have them at three. I would have the Jets at two. And really the reason I have the Lions at one and the Jets at two, I think the coaching staffs right now, you'd kind of bucket them pretty similarly. Although I do think Ben Johnson is a better offensive coordinator than Nathaniel Hackett is.
What?
But
get out of here.
I know, but still, like, I think if you're ranking NFL coaching staffs, the Jets and Lions are going to be in the same sort of ballpark there. So that's sort of a wash. I think the Jets have better skill position players if Breece Hall is healthy and Garrett Wilson takes that next step than the Lions do. The Lions definitely have a better offensive line than the Jets do, but the Jets probably have a better defense and have better cornerstone players on that side of the ball, while the Lions are still sort of kind of getting there. I mean, you look at the Lions defense, it's like Aiden Hutchinson could potentially be a superstar, and they added some dudes in the secondary, like CJ Gardner-Johnson, Cam Sutton. You know, there's a lot of players, Brian Branch they drafted. But still, those are projections and everything too. So I think the Jets have the better defense. And then it really comes down to quarterback play. And Rodgers could definitely fall off a cliff or he'd be hurt or something like that. But right now, I think going into week one, I'm going to rank Aaron Rodgers as a better quarterback than Jared Goff. So really, I think the thing that really undid the Denver Broncos last year is that the quarterback play was subpar. I think it is more likely that Jared Goff offers you subpar quarterback play, even in a good situation in Detroit, because I have questions about Detroit and the skill position players. Like we said, as much as I think Amon-Ra St. Brown is that dude, they got issues. And then I think that's more likely he has subpar quarterback play there than Aaron Rodgers has, because he is Aaron Rodgers, even if in New York. So our lists are completely separate here, which means I think Colin's going to have to
We're tied like third place vote, second place. Yeah, if we're doing MVP
this
style.
This is way points, harder than last week, Harmon. No, this is. I mean, you guys both make great cases. I could see realities for all of this. And not to go back to Dallas, but I think what got overshadowed in that divisional game. Hear me out. What got overshadowed with
The Dallas Cowboys are this year's Denver Broncos. No.
Brock Purdy looked real human in that game against Dan Quinn's defense.
Yep.
And I always want to see guys who have crazy success in a short period of time. What happens when defensive coordinators have a full offseason to prepare for that, right? And what does Brock Purdy look like? What if he turns into a pumpkin? What if Trey Lance really is a bust? Like those are real things that can happen. And I think you can get by with the magic of Kyle Shanahan for stretches of mediocre quarterback play. I don't think you could do that over an entire year. And this we have seen happen. I think you alluded to it, Harmon. We've seen this happen with the Niners. They went to a Super Bowl, had a lot of hype, and then followed it up in 2020 with a 6-10 year. Again, so much of that was due to injuries. For whatever reason, this does seem to be a franchise that is constantly snake bitten by injuries over and over again at every position. So yeah, let's go with the spicy tick. Let's click the button, Frank, and let's Woo! Give it to the San Francisco 49ers. It's crazy. It sounds crazy.
Dalton's never going to talk to us again. 49ers fans going to be having their pitchforks out when they're 11-1. I'll tell you. But I'll say this. I've already made a bet on the NFC West, and it's for Seattle Seahawks to win the division. I think they're going to win the division. I do.
Oh yeah. I mean, I was more comfortable. Sounds crazy to say, but I was so like not even close to putting the Seahawks in the finalists because I'm that. God, I should have known. You leave it up to a producer. They're definitely going to take the spiciest thing here. So listen,
I can't wait to put this on Twitter and just see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not retweeting it. I'll tell you that. This will be the first show in podcast history. I do not retweet. Yeah, listen, even if it's not my pick, I'm a man of democracy. I'm a man of the process here. So, the 49ers are this year's Denver Broncos. They've won.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? Thank God this podcast is early June. Definitely do not revisit the feed in like August and September when the listens go up. Okay, let's leave it alone here. So yeah, all right, Frank. Hell of a process. We did it. We said it all. Colin is really the real villain of the show. If you're a 49ers fan, he's the one who broke the tie here. So a typical Dallas fan, you know, you can redirect your anger to him on Twitter. But Frank, I appreciate you doing this with me, man. What you got working right now that people can check out?
Starting to write those team previews, come out once a day, starting, I believe, June 20th. I'll give you a spoiler. Arizona Cardinals will be the first one out of the gate at number 32. That roster is as bad as I've seen in a long time. My goodness. So, but I always love team preview season because, you know, it's a lot of work for me. I get so involved. Like I pretty much spend a day just immersing myself in a team, and it makes me feel like football's right around the corner. And we all agree that's a good thing.
We can all agree that's a good thing. Feels very good. So, all right, that is going to do it for this podcast. Be sure to follow us both on Twitter. He's Frank Schwab at Yahoo Schwab, company man himself. I'm Matt Harmon at @Matt_BYB. Also, if you don't mind, you're feeling generous because the weather is nice. It's summer. Give us an updated review on the podcast. Let us know what you think of the Condo Cast here and our summer Flip the Script series. Also, be sure to join us on Thursday as Andy Behrens hops on the pod for the next installment of the series. Who is going to be this year's Geno Smith? We dive into the best dark horse quarterbacks that could finish inside the top five in fantasy rankings this season. Also, we're going to end that show with a very special guest and interview. I can't give it away who they are. Literally, I'm not allowed to tell you. It is embargoed information, but let's just say they're on the cover of a pretty big football game you might have heard of this year. Yeah, you may have heard of it. You may have heard of him. Be sure to listen on Thursday. Until then, we're out.